virtually every organization I've worked at loves having people who are just sort of chomping at the bit to improve, to do better, to figure out how to apply what they're interested in to the organization.
Hey, my name is Felix Tia, and I'm the host of the Culture of Code podcast. Each week, we invite experienced and successful software engineers to reveal exactly what they've learned about growing and succeeding in the tech industry. In this episode, you'll learn about a valuable role that's not strictly management and not strictly individual contributor at the more senior levels, that's called the glue. How to plant the seed of recognition, especially when your contributions are not as visible, and how to always be aware of the areas at your company where you can add the most value. All right, so today I'm joined by Aaron Suggs, Principal Site Reliability Engineer at Glossier. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Wonderful to be here, Felix.
Yeah, so I gave a very, very short intro about your current role. Can you talk to us about the kind of career, the kind of path, the kind of jobs you've picked up along the way to get to where you are today?
Yeah. So I've been a software engineer and of various types for probably the past 16 years or so, in and out of a couple management roles from time to time as well. Really started at my college computer lab. I was like doing tech support in this computer lab, and my manager was like, "Hey, this is early 2000s, so it's like you installed everything with like CD-ROMs." He's like, "Aaron, I'd like you to install this new CD-ROM software on like our 200 computers," and I kind of like incredulously was like, "Well, I need to like walk around the 200 computers. This is going to take a long time." And he's like, "You could do that. Or you could check out this tool called SSH." And so I read up about like how to use SSH and write a bash script to like, from my one computer and its CD-ROM drive, like install this software across the entire computer lab. And I just felt like such a powerful wizard doing that, to be like, oh my gosh, I can make all these computers run whatever software I want. And so that I was totally bitten by the bug of, wanting to write software, and certainly being very interested in how the internet is changing society and creating these new ways that people interact. And so from that college experience, you know, turning into like a sysadmin job, and then realizing that, you know, I wanted to be a bit more creative instead of like configuring web servers. I taught myself Ruby on Rails and sort of parlayed that into a startup job. And then it was sort of like at this time when DevOps was becoming a sort of cultural movement and is sort of marrying this, using object-oriented programming to manage your servers and that sort of thing. And so there was a serendipitous moment at a tiny email startup that I was working on, where it's a very small company. It was like five people, and we'd made the initial app on our laptops, and we're like, "Oh, I guess it's time to like get this running on servers." And you know, the group looks around at each other, and we're like, "Who wants to do this?" And everybody was kind of like, not it. And I was like, "I know SSH," and they're like, "Cool, you can get this running on in production." Then more recently, I've been working at Kickstarter. That was like 2010 or so, and you know, had a fantastic time on that team. And then for the past 3 years, I've been at Glossier, helping scale this direct to consumer e-commerce brand.
Awesome. So what do you think has been the most valuable use of your time and energy during this kind of trajectory? Because I think that this path that you've taken, and you know, people can look you up and see the kind of jobs you've had in the past. But what do you think was along the way that has helped you kind of position yourself in a way where you can step into the role that you're in today?
Yeah, I think always trying to be curious and seeing where I could learn more or go a little bit deeper into a topic, that has either always been directly useful of like, I learned that school. Oh gosh, like I've read so much documentation about like AWS APIs is like the quirky thing that I do a lot of. And so that definitely like has a lot of impact in my day to day, but just being able to like go deep down, rabbit holes or like yak shaves to get two components to work together that seem like they're not really wanting to work together. Having a bit of gumption to just do the work until it's accomplished. Even if it doesn't turn out to like, you're going to use that exact knowledge again in the future, just having yourself learn the skill of, I'm going to learn this new thing. I'm going to develop a new competency. And maybe I use that competency a lot in the future, but at least it's going to make any new thing I learn even easier.
Yeah. I think one of the challenges when you have this curiosity is like what direction to point it, right? So how do you make that decision for yourself when there's just so many different things you can learn? How do you know what's like the best use of your focus?
That's a really great question. What jumps to mind for me is like having, being sort of in tune with the challenges at your particular organization. And having a really open relationship or like a really trusting relationship with your manager, where they can help sort of point you in the right direction and you're coming up with ideas for these things. So I think of it as like looking for a niche in your organization where you can sort of develop this deep expertise and be one of like the subject matter experts on the team. And you know, so when people ask like what should this be or how do I find that thing, I kind of believe that people need to find it for themselves because it needs to be sort of this self-generated thing instead of something, you know, your manager told you to do. But you know, it can be. I've seen it. For thinking of some examples that I've seen engineers gravitate towards, it's getting really good at accessibility, getting really good at deployment processes, getting really good at how we render React components and like efficient ways to do this, and all the various like browser compatibility gotchas that might go into front end development. It can be. It can be data stores and like how do we design the schema to be scalable and you know, reliable for all sorts of different mm-hmm. backends that we might have. So yeah. My intuition is like there are probably lots of opportunities to go deeper in any of these things and to just sort of constantly be sort of flagging them with your manager. It's like, hey, I'm kind of curious to go deeper in this. It seems like it would really benefit the organization.
Yeah, that's going to be my next kind of follow-up, which is like, how do you balance this, your own kind of curiosity or topics that you're personally interested in versus maybe optimizing for what's the most value that you can offer to the organization, to the business?
Yeah, it's really got to be both. I would almost start with what you personally gravitate towards and then try to find how that fits into the business or maybe have like, you know, a couple different, three or four areas that you would personally be interested in going into. And then amongst those, pick the one that has the most acute or business need or the largest business opportunity.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think there's probably going to be an overlap, right, to some degree, depending on, for the most part, at least. So when it comes to trying to see if it is something that you're more interested in, what is that maybe you took or that you would offer to others to kind of dip your toe in the water to see if this is a path you might want to dive deeper into?
Yeah, so personally, you know, I look for something that is scratching a clear itch. Like it's something that's somewhat new, where there is a growing, I sort of look for community momentum of like people are starting to talk about this thing, but it's very much like a prototype or we're trying it out, to be an early adopter on that learning curve. That's when there is a lot of time for you to sort of emerge as a leader or a you know, foremost person in the community for that particular tool or framework or library or whatever, mm-hmm. or that development pattern. So I kind of look for that, you know, looking for room to grow.
Yeah. So I think you mentioned how you'll do things like read AWS documentation. What else do you do to really understand or to get a better handle, better grasp of new technologies or new areas of focus that you want to do? Is it just documentation or what is there else beyond that can help you, again, develop better understanding?
I find that applying it really helps for me. And so I would look for ways to have like a side project that I might build this way. You know, I hadn't built a lot with Gatsby before, but was kind of curious about it. And so, you know, I made a starter blog that was like almost less about having a blog and more about just like having a reason to try some of these new front end frameworks. Another, when it comes to like programming languages or patterns, there are some really cool like programming like challenge type stuff. I think of Advent of Code. I think of like Project Euler as sort of puzzles that you can come up with many different solutions to that are almost always kind of fun to do. And so those are one of the things that I really like learning new software languages or patterns that way. For other times, it might be like, oh, here's a prototype of like in an organization. It's great to do this on the job too, right? So like in your organization, you might say like, oh, here's a sort of internal, a small challenge that we're having, and here's like a new tool that I think we could apply to improve that. Of, you know, maybe a real one that we had was, you know, we were managing our on-call rotation with like a web interface, and we would kind of mess it up a little bit, or, you know, people would forget when they're on call or whatever. And we're like, what if we could just like have this be infrastructure as code? And it's like it's a code change in Terraform if you want to, you know, add a new person to the rotation or take an old person out or something like that. And so it started out as a safe little prototype. And then it was kind of like, oh boy, like Terraform is working great for this like infrastructure as code. Like, let's do more and more of that. And it can kind of snowball from there. So trying to think of like, what is a safe, small way for us to start adopting this thing and gain confidence in it? Because it's a difficult ask to say like, we're going to like rewrite everything to like use this unproven new technology. So yeah, make it safe and make it fun make it safe for the organization, make it fun for you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially if you're in more of a junior role, it's probably harder to get that kind of traction, that kind of approval, if you do want to make some kind of wholesale change versus looking for small areas of improvement that you can kind of practice in. So tell us more about what your day-to-day like is these days. Like we had mentioned before at the start of this, you're a principal site reliability engineer at Glossier. Before that, you've basically been there for about a little bit over 3 years now. Tell us more about what your day-to-day is like in your current role.
My time is probably a bit more than half meetings, like scheduled group conversations. This will be like going over, sometimes it's like going over status updates, or it's like debugging why a project is stalled, or you know, making sure everybody's aware of like what's coming down the pipe. You know, I think it's really important to use that. I think of meetings as like synchronous attention, and sometimes meetings have a you know, bad reputation, but I would say that's because the meetings are not well facilitated, or you know, don't have clear agendas or outcomes or like questions, information that people should be bringing. They can be really productive when they're well facilitated. Then my sort of alone time work is usually writing. This is like writing plans for how we'll sort of approach future projects, sort of documenting existing system stuff, doing a lot of review of like other people's project plans, or we call them like ERDs, or like engineering approach documents. Or engineering requirements documents rather. A lot of code review, that sort of thing. And then a fair amount of like pairing with other engineers too, that's sometimes scheduled, but often like ad hoc, of like somebody runs into something that wasn't really planned, and or like runs into a bug and they're like, oh, hey, I know Aaron has like done similar work in the past. Like, let me sort of loop him in as a subject matter expert. And then I always make sure to leave some like unscheduled time on my calendar each day, exactly for that kind of unplanned reactive work. It's also sort of an antidote from burnout, of just feeling like there's too much to do every day. And so I always try to like, it's a good day in my book if I got got through everything I intended to do, and now have a little extra time to, you know, do whatever extra I would like to do.
Makes sense. So once you, you know, the way that you describe your day is going to look completely or totally different, or very different from more of a kind of a IC role where you are maybe, you know, a few years into your career where the majority of your time is focused on writing code or debugging or fixing bugs. And when you start transitioning into more of this kind of leadership role, into a management role, things start to shift. So once that started happening for you, what areas of, I guess, skills or attributes did you already have, or did you invest in more to make sure that you were ready to kind of step into this new type of role?
Yeah, well, one of the ways it's changed is I sort of spend more time thinking long term. And I've always kind of wanted to gravitate towards that. You know, I would also bucket my work into a few different three different categories. And I realize this isn't exactly answering your question, but like I think of a senior person really trying to like leverage their time to have this broader team impact. And on the longest time horizon, the first thing that comes to mind is like I want to be identifying challenges or problems that we will have down the road. And then simultaneously, I'm also like identifying solutions to those problems, because it's not that helpful to just have somebody who identifies problems but not solutions. But so as problems are becoming acute, then I want to make sure I have this like guiding policy or a plan for how we'll address it. And then I'm also helping the team implement these solutions for some of our current challenges, or the challenges that we see are sort of near on the horizon. I would say that as you get more senior, you sort of go up that chart of like thinking more long term, thinking about broader, more amorphous impact, more ambiguous impact, or ambiguous problems and challenges, rather than sort of like the most specific things.
Got it. And now that you have experience at this level and in this role, what are some areas that if people are that are looking to follow this career path to where you're at, if they're not aware of, it would be a surprise where their attention, their focus, or maybe their expectations have changed in a certain direction that might be surprising. Maybe not in a good way either, if they're not prepared for it. What are some things that hit on that are, again, sort of surprises or things that people may not consider before they step into a role like yours?
I think about the way in which leaders are a role model in so many ways, from the way they make decisions to, you know, the tone of voice when they talk to people in meetings, you know, how dependable they are for when they say they'll do something. I think being a senior person, you are definitely a role model in a lot of ways, and some of those maybe were unexpected. There's also software engineers have a lot of agency over how they want to shape their career. So there are plenty of organizations who would want very senior people like staff or principal engineers that are heads down writing code a lot. You know, and I've worked with other principal engineers and have a ton of respect for I learned a lot from other principal engineers that are like primarily doing like implementation and writing code all day long, and they're great at it. That's just kind of not the kind of principal engineer I am. And I kind of gravitate towards more of these like soft skill, getting teams to collaborate, building alignment across stakeholders, gluey kind of work. And so I think doing some introspection yourself of like, what are the tasks that bring me energy or, you know, bring me satisfaction in my job, and having a candid conversation with your manager about like how you can do more of that. Or, you know, what are the things you could be doing to get a little bit better at those things each time? I think you'll find that virtually every organization I've worked at loves having people who are just sort of chomping at the bit to improve, to do better, to figure out how to apply what they're interested in to the organization.
Yeah, this is interesting about how that there's different roles where, again, it's implementation versus what you call glue. And I like the analogy you use with the word glue. If you are looking to either demonstrate your soft skills that you can be a glue and get teams to work and get a buy-in across, you know, organization, across departments, and be that kind of player, how do you, because I think that the path is much clearer, right, for implementation. But when it comes to someone that comes on that becomes the glue, how do you even kind of demonstrate that you can take on that kind of responsibility?
Yeah, I think having a high trust relationship with your manager or some other like senior mentors on the team to sort of give you a thumbs up that glue work is valuable and worth doing. I think that's the key to making it something rewarding. And you know, I'll recognize that it's all too common for this work to be hard to see or under-recognized. Mm-hmm. And I would say I'm personally like very fortunate to have managers that are very clear-eyed about its value and appreciate its value. But I'd also like, I'll say I also kind of seed that recognition a little bit, where I'll sort of come to it as a challenge of being like, boy, you know, seems like this project is stuck because the couple stakeholders don't totally agree on what the goals are. And like, I think it would be nice if I helped, come up with a plan that would let everybody be successful here. And my manager could say like, yeah, sure, that sounds good. Please go do it. And then I get to say like, hey, you know, I think I did that. What do you think? Do you think I did that? And they get to say, yes, like you, people are aligned now, or like, you know, we got that thing unblocked. So I almost communicated in a way that like helps it be recognized. So I would encourage other people starting out to do it to have a similar approach and certainly make sure you have that alignment with your manager that if this is going to be something that you're going to be investing your own attention and energy into, that and you expect it to be sort of professionally recognized or rewarded, your manager and the senior people in your organization appreciate that too. Otherwise, you're sort of setting yourself up for maybe it being unrecognized.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great kind of nugget for people to take away, which is that you kind of have to market yourself a bit inside the company where, yes, while doing something that's right for the company and not seeking a recognition is honorable, but it doesn't hurt anyone and only helps you if you can also make sure that everyone is aware of your kind of contribution and you know that you get recognized for it, which you should get recognized for it as well. So I think that's important that you kind of position it that way and make sure that people are kind of aware at the start about what you are, your role that you're playing to kind of get this across the finish line. So what about on the other side of it, where what are some common, now that you're in the role that you're in, maybe when you were before you stepped into more of the leadership roles, before you stepped into the kind of principal roles or director roles, what were some of the myths that you had or that you see others having about the role that you've now discovered aren't as true as you might have thought?
I used to think that, you know, people would be senior because they're leaders because they were experts in everything, that they knew how to do everything better than I was, and like that's why they were so high up in the organization or something. And that is absolutely not true. Finding ways to sort of help the people around you, whether it's the people on your team, the stakeholders that you work with closely outside of your team, your manager or your manager's peers, like anything you can do to sort of help them do their jobs better is really the most leveraged work, some of the most leveraged work that you could be doing. Sometimes it's not just like doing the cards that are on your backlog or like your to-do list, but it's identifying what should be there or like better ways to work, better ways to scope projects, different projects to take on that would have the outcomes that the people around you and in your organization are looking for. There's a lot of room for creativity Even if like some organizations like really emphasize that we want people to be coming up with those solutions, other organizations, you know, may not do that so much, but I would say it's always sort of appreciated if you can say like, hey, here's a project that I think we can do, and I'm going to figure out how to make the case for it in my organization. Yeah. And also, you know, leaders are making a lot of decisions. They can forget context, you know, and or they might not have the whole context. And so anything you can do to make the context clear and succinct, to make the sort of tough trade-offs explicit, that is going to make the people around you a lot more confident in your decision-making abilities and make them comfortable giving you more and more authority or autonomy.
Yeah. And you talked about this too, about having this kind of context, giving this context, and also being the glue. And that can, you know, you mentioned it can become unrecognized unless you plant the seed for it, like you had mentioned. But it sounds like you also need to kind of get a good lay of the land, be connected with the right departments, the right people to develop this either intuition or develop this like reconnaissance, which you do understand where there might be areas that you can kind of add a helping hand or be a glue. So what's your strategy there to make sure that you are kind of plugged in at the right places in the company so that you can be made aware of areas that you can to add, you know, your skills and add your contributions?
So personally, what I do is I love to schedule virtual coffees, with whether they're new people at the organization or, you know, my manager's peers or like my peers in like other departments or in different roles. And then these virtual coffees are sort of just like, tell me what's working well for you. What do you think your department does particularly well? What are some of the challenges you're facing? What are some of the important goals that you have? And it's a little bit of like, tell me about your work and just being genuinely interested and at like active listening when they tell you that sort of when they answer. People are generally very receptive to that. And you sort of get this rich context on what are other people throughout the organization trying to do, or, you know, what are the challenges that they're facing right now.
Got it. And either at your current role or roles in the past, what do you particularly look for when you are looking at, you know, because a lot of listeners out there are going to be, you know, more junior in their careers and looking to take on more of a leadership role. Maybe some are looking to step into more of this kind of, again, like you mentioned, this glue role, this either staff or principal engineer role where you are kind of the glue. What kind of almost like table stakes or what kind of attributes or skills do you think stand out a lot when it comes to someone being an obvious candidate for that next level?
Just to clarify, this was like, why would somebody get promoted, or like, what would I look for in promoting somebody?
Yeah, what would you look for in promoting someone specifically from mostly like implementation role into a role that you have thrived in, which again is more of this kind of this glue that is operating at a higher level?
I'd look to make sure that they want to do that. It should very much be like a self-elected thing. So, you know, this is the same thing if people are going into management. You know, it's good to have a conversation of like, why do you want to go into management? And like, are you clear-eyed about the expectations and the challenges? So being clear-eyed about what it means that you're not going to be an expert in the components that you might be an expert in right now. And that, you know, it's all naturally a little uncomfortable to have people come to you with questions that you used to know, and now you say, I don't know. And then whether you get energy from that or whether that is a satisfying job to be a small part of a big success, as opposed to like a big part of smaller successes. When I think of a lot of my individual contributor work. And then of course, always for any promotion, it would be like demonstrated experience, consistently doing the thing that they're expected to do, and have it be like, that's just sort of like a fairness requirement that I would expect for any promotion.
Yeah. So one thing you mentioned about stepping into this role, making sure you're clear about what you're gaining and what you're losing, basically by kind of shedding your old robes and stepping into new ones. Have you ever had experience yourself or know of anyone else that has had to kind of roll back that decision and say, you know what, spending a year here or so is not what I want. I want to go back to maybe an individual contributor role instead. Is that possible? What are the challenges with kind of rolling that back?
So I'll speak personally that in my experience, having gone from like manager to an individual contributor role twice, they were both at times where I sort of felt that the management challenges of the organization were a bit beyond what the resources that I had at my disposal. You know, it was just kind of leading to a bit of burnout for me. And it was a way to flip the script and say, you know what, I'm going to focus on a different set of challenges that I can bring a lot more energy and enthusiasm to, that I think I can make a lot more progress on. And having that candid discussion with my manager about what's working, what's not working, just by them seeing, like, I mentioned earlier, being able having managers that really like recognize the breadth of your contributions and that sort of thing, I was able to say, like, hey, you know, I think I'm really going to be more impactful if I focus on some of the if I do soft leadership and rather than like explicit leadership for some teams that I thought were kind of understaffed at the time, I think any manager would want to say yes. Like, we want to retain great people. We'll figure out roles that work for you. Honestly, if the manager says they're not down for that, it's probably not the right place for you to be. And you can think of the law of 2 feet of, you know, if your job isn't fulfilling, software engineers have a lot of opportunity, and I'd encourage you to look elsewhere.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sometimes it's not the right organization, that there really is no solution within that organization that would make sense for you. And now when you are looking at kind of growing your skills, growing the value that you're adding as individual contributor, you know, their technologies change all the time. There's almost lots of learning, always learning in terms of reading documentation, new technologies that come out. When it is more of the managerial role, the more kind of, again, overseer or glue role that you're playing, is there a kind of a manual that you can follow? Are there things that you can learn? Is it mostly learn on the job? Like, how do you make sure that you're kind of staying sharp?
This is really something that's changed throughout my career. I would say early in my career, I got a lot of value of trying to be an early adopter of new technologies. I would see new patterns. So like right as DevOps was sort of like getting momentum, I was like, oh man, I am like so into DevOps and wanted to, help the organization roll out Chef and built internal tools that let us deploy with like one click in a web UI and trying to do all the DevOpsy stuff. We broke down the silos between engineers and operations teams. And as I've matured, it's become less important to be always on that like bleeding edge early adopter curve. And it's been much more important to be rigorous about my decision-making process. And in fact, a lot of times as we review other sort of like proposals or code, it's sometimes like, are they doing the right thing? But it's very much about how they're making the decision, like how they tested this, what assumptions like sort of led them to believe that this was the most appropriate solution. And like, are those reasonable assumptions? That's the sort of lens that ends up just being a scalable use of leadership attention and focus. And building those skills has really been the thing is, it's like not very like software engineering specific. It's just sort of like general management or general leadership. And you can sort of lean on how other industries have benefited from like these sorts of decision-making frameworks and things like that.
So what would be something that you, if you could wave a magic wand and take off your plate, what would it be? What would the answer be to that for you?
Boy, I think of about how many projects I've done that have failed, how many times I thought I had a solution and it turned out to like not work at all. Whether it's, you know, a hypothesis about where a bug was coming from and where why my change would fix it, and he's like, turns out that totally wasn't the bug, or it's like a process being like, oh, if only we surface this information, then like we're going to get a lot better at like managing it or something like that. And it's like, turns out, you know, that we needed much different sort of buy-in from stakeholders or something like that. So I'd say I've failed quite a bit. I even keep a list of, you know, things that I've tried that haven't worked out. And it can be kind of brutal to look through that list. But when I'm doing something, and now I have sort of this spidey sense in my brain of like, oh, am I doing something kind of risky? Like, is this something that might fail? And, you know, I try to be really honest and sufficiently skeptical with myself. And I kind of go through that list and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, I'm not going to fail in that way. I'm not going to fail in that way. I've guarded against that. And I'm just sort of like building up this checklist of things to make sure that of mistakes I'm not going to repeat. And so it sort of turns into this double-edged sword that it lets you bounce back, not take it so personally, or not let it be so gut-wrenching when a project does fail. I take it way less personally now. And it's almost like the engine for building resiliency as well. So it totally sucks to fail. It's always frustrating. Like, that's not going to change, but I just look to make it like a little better, and learn as much as I can from it.
Awesome. And I'll leave you this last question. What do you think you want to personally spend and focus your time energy on in the near future, next year or so, to further grow in your career?
Yeah, my jam is helping organizations scale past inflection points. You know, in my 7 years at Kickstarter, I would say that's where I sort of really got a passion for this, where there are days where there are early times where you found product market fit and like every project is just going great, your users love it, and you know, success comes easy as you're riding this like hockey stick of growth, and that's super exciting. But, you know, it doesn't last forever. And that you reach this inflection point where like, oh, projects aren't going so great. And like, we're having to work harder and harder to get new traffic and that sort of thing. And that forces this organizational self-reflection of like, what do we need to do differently? What had we been doing that is no longer working and we need to change? And, you know, what's the secret sauce that is really important that we continue doing, because that's why our customers, or that's why our users love us. I'm sort of helping. I helped Kickstarter with that. I'm helping Glossier with that. I think about, how do I build this sort of core engine of growth and scalability and just like healthy engineering practices. That I think is going to be my focus this year and for years to come. In practice this year, it's going to be iterating on the metrics and key performance indicators that the managers throughout our engineering team use to understand the health of their services, and that we're sort of like rolling up into availability dashboards and overall system health. You know, we have some that have worked for a while, and it's time to sort of like tighten the screws and like make it a little bit more rigorous, or like go a level deeper to sort of have a deeper insight into what's going on.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experience, Aaron.
Thank you, Felix. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Culture of Code podcast. Now, if you're a software engineer that wants actionable advice on how to grow and succeed in the tech industry, and you want to hear that advice straight from successful and experienced engineers, make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode.